So this is Jodie Dighton from Primal Talks, and today I am very excited to be joined by Melissa Hartwig, who is the co-author of It Starts With Food, The Whole 30. You've seen her all over the internet, you've seen her on Instagram, and I am here talking to her today while she's in London for her seminars this weekend. So it is so lovely to meet you, Melissa.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. This was a really wonderful seminar. I had a lot of fun.
Excellent. Just to start with, The Whole 30 is probably, in the paleo world, one of the most well-known books, one of the most well-known concepts that when people want to transition to a healthier lifestyle or they're trying to make kind of a big change and a big adjustment, they tend to start with a Whole 30. Why do you think The Whole 30 has been grasped onto so strongly? What do you think is different between it and most other things out there that makes it so easy for people to take on?
I think part of it is just the structure of the program itself, the fact that the rules are so clearly defined, that they're so black and white, and that the expectations are so clear, I think gives people a really clear set of expectations. Like, I know exactly what I'm getting into, I know how long I'm going to do it for, I know exactly what I'm supposed to do. I think because we've developed so many resources for the program as well, they're supported on every level. So from a pantry cleaning out perspective, to how to talk to friends and family, to how do I emotionally prepare for the program, we've got them covered. And I think because we focus so much on people's habits and their emotional relationship with food, I think that really resonates. People have tried other diets, they've tried other elimination plans before, they've tried other quick fix weight losses, and none of that stuff has stuck because they haven't thought about how to change their habits and how to change their relationship with food. So I think because we talk about that so upfront with the Whole 30, it really resonates with people.
And one of the interesting things that you talked about quite a lot today is the concept of willpower in sticking to diets. And that is, I completely agree, that is one of the main reasons why the Whole 30 is such a good framework to follow, because it does help you support that concept that, you know, willpower isn't just going to be the only thing that, you know, that white knuckling you talked about of just trying to get through it. So how is it, can you just explain a little bit why the Whole 30 is different in that it's not just reliant on willpower? This isn't just how strong are you to get through this?
Yeah, you know, it's not, the Whole 30 is not a boot camp or a hazing, as the media sometimes likes to describe it. Because we aim to change your physiological reaction to food, your emotional reaction to food, and your habits, it's like all three of those things are working in conjunction to make it easier for you to both stay on the plan, but also take the habits and the new kind of behaviors that you've learned on the program with you after the plan. So from a physiological perspective, because we're not allowing these foods with no breaks that promote overconsumption, because we're helping you better regulate your blood sugar, because we're helping you balance your hormones, because we're not allowing you to recreate those baked goods and treats and comfort foods that you would normally use as a way to sort of self-soothe or comfort yourself, all of those things are working in conjunction so that you're changing your tastes. You're not experiencing, quote, hunger when you're just having a blood sugar issue. You're able to replace the old habits that you had with new ones because we're forcing you to look at things like, you know, the concept of dessert or stepping on the scale every day. And you have to find new ways to deal with cravings, to self-soothe, to comfort, to show love, because you're not able to use the foods that you were eating. So because we provide you with all of these constructs, but also all of the support, you're not just white knuckle willpowering your way through the program. It's actually changing your tastes, changing your habits, changing your relationship with food, which actually frees up your willpower center for other kind of more unexpected temptations that you might encounter when you're on the Whole 30. So it kind of works synergistically to help you move all of your decision making from the effort part of the brain to the habit part of the brain, which makes the idea of willpower that much easier to hold on to.
And, you know, I don't think people realize, you talk about food with no breaks, and I don't think people realize the effects that those actually have on them long term. When they look for different diet plans, because, you know, being January, everybody is, you know, looking for every diet that is going to make the difference this time. And whether you go to Weight Watchers or whether you go to Slimming World, which I don't know if you guys do, I know you Weight Watchers, Slimming World
sure.
as well, and,
yeah.
and all the other ones, which is just, you know, caloric intake and your points and this and that, but it's still including all these foods that are really, really hard to resist, but you're allowed to have them in moderation.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was one thing when I first did my first Whole 30. I never appreciated the concept of relationship with food. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what that meant. And that concept that, yeah, no, I can't start a bag of crisps because I can't stop mm-hmm. a bag of crisps. Do you think that's part of the reason why it's so much more successful than these other types of diet programs?
I mean, I think that it is. You know, the problem with some of these foods with no breaks, it's not that we start eating them. It's that once we start, we can't stop eating them. And it's the stress that that promotes and the guilt and the shame, which only promotes more cravings. And it's this really vicious cycle that we're on. And until we remove those foods from our diet via the rules of the Whole 30 and the idea that you're not allowed to recreate them, until we remove them from our diet completely, we're not able to change our tastes. We're not forced to figure out, how do I reward myself without these foods? How do I comfort myself without these foods? How does my mom show me love without giving me chocolate chip cookies? Until you don't have access to those foods, you're never forced to find other coping mechanisms. You know, I think the idea of embracing the technicalities of the Whole 30 without embracing the spirit of intention would make it look like any other diet out there. You know, you can recreate all these foods using technically approved Whole 30 ingredients, but you know, the idea of moderation, and I get that, and a lot of people will say, well, why do you need to do something as extreme as the Whole 30? Why can't you just moderate? Listen, if people could moderate, I would be out of a job, right? People can't moderate. The concept is very airy. Moderation means different things to different people, and the kinds of foods that we're moderating with don't lend themselves to moderation. They're designed to make us overconsume. So we're really fighting a losing battle there, and until you get rid of those foods completely for a set period of time and kind of reset your taste buds and your relationship with food and your cravings, you don't stand a chance in learning how to moderate.
No, and you know, our relationship with food is so built into us as well, because before we even start eating, we get these, you know, our own concepts of foods that are bad for us, or that are the foods that we can't seem to control and stop. You know, from an early age, we were rewarded with food. Mm-hmm. We built this relationship from, you know, our parents' love that, mm-hmm. you know, I was good, or mom spending some time with me, so we're baking chocolate chip cookies. And so now they're forming all these relationships beyond just me and a chocolate chip cookie. There's that whole basis of, that's how I show love to my children, because that's how my parents mm-hmm. showed me love. And it's a massive cycle that needs to be broken, isn't it?
It is a massive cycle. And very often it comes from childhood. When you ask people, you know, what's your first memory of food? Very often it's, oh, I wasn't allowed to have junk food in the house, so I would go buy candy and hide under the bed and eat it. Or when mom and dad fought, every time they fought, they would take me to the ice cream shop and I would get an ice cream. Or, you know, every Friday when I came home and I had good grades on my report card, my mom would bake me chocolate chip cookies. Those are really powerful associations. And so, I mean, A, you're talking about decades of learned behavior that have been enforced. And obviously, you can't expect to totally erase those in just 30 days. But the construct and the support we offer with the Whole 30 can go a really hard way towards at least identifying those associations. I had a guy in my last Toronto book signing who said, until I did the Whole 30, I never realized that I comfort ate when my knees ached. And it wasn't until I couldn't eat those foods that I identified, oh, I want to eat because my knees hurt. And what else can I do when my knees hurt? And so it's a really powerful association that I think the Whole 30 can, even just the awareness that it promotes, is a really huge first step in identifying how to change that behavior.
No, I think that, like, with the concept of, you know, no excuses, no slips, no cheats, I don't think it's possible to create that awareness mm-hmm. without fully removing yourself from it, because you never get that opportunity to kind of stand on the other side of the glass and look back on it yeah. to realize how strong of associations you put with these foods mm-hmm. and how much onus you put on them in for you know, self-worth mm-hmm. or love or affection for other people. And I think people oftentimes don't even know what to replace those with now mm-hmm. if they can't replace them with food.
Yeah, they don't. And I mean, that's the first thing is people will say, well, I've done so good on my diet, I want to reward myself. And the first thing or the only thing they think of is, I'm going to go eat some bad food. And, you know, it's counterintuitive, but it's what our brains have been trained to expect in terms of the reward. So what we do on the Whole 30, no cheats, no slips, no excuses, we force you to look at that relationship, and we force you to say, you had a bad day at work, you can't have a glass of wine, what are you going to do? And so we will, in the support that we offer and a lot of the habit research that I read, we direct people towards finding a new routine that gives you the same reward. When you get home from work, you know, and you feed yourself chocolate chip cookies because you had a bad day, it's not about the cookie itself. It's about either feeling like you're comforting yourself, feeling like you're treating yourself, feeling like you're taking 5 minutes and doing something indulgent just for you. So what else can you do when you get home from a bad day at work that gives you that same reward? Is it locking yourself in your bedroom for 10 minutes and taking time for yourself? Is it going for a walk? Is it calling a friend? Is it reading 10 pages of a really good book? Is it taking a 10-minute bath? Like, what else can you do to give yourself the same reward that doesn't include these less healthy behaviors?
And I think, you know, with the no excuses, I think that's what you'll find is loads of excuses as to why in this time-poor society that we live in now, it's a quick fix, isn't it? It's easy to carry on. I can come home from work. The kids are busy needing their homework done. I'm feeling drained, but actually I'm giving myself reward of eating that cookie whilst I make dinner because now I'm carrying on. I'm multitasking, mm-hmm. but giving myself that reward and kind of lifting myself up with this at the same time, which actually is just ending up being more detrimental.
Yeah. The brain will justify and rationalize in any way it needs to do in order to get the reward that it wants. So it's why the concept of moderation doesn't work, because if you say to yourself, well, I'm going to moderate and I'm only going to eat one sweet treat a day, you will find a way to justify why you get to eat more than one. Well, this was a really small one, so it doesn't really count as one. Or I had a really bad day, or I'll eat two today and I won't eat any tomorrow. Like, the brain will always find a way to justify or rationalize the reward. So we want to take that out of the equation entirely. And like, from discomfort comes growth. And it's not a comfortable process. It's way more comfortable and easier and rewarding just to keep doing what you're doing, but that cycle isn't making you happier. You've got the cycle of craving and overconsumption and guilt, shame, remorse, and stress and more craving and overconsumption. Like, we need to cut that off and break it. And that process is going to be uncomfortable, but that's where the growth happens.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. The other aspect of the Whole30, which I think is fantastic, in one of the trends I've been, you know, speaking with a lot about functional nutrition, about functional nutritionists about this year already, has been this trend towards personalized health plans, mm-hmm. and how this one diet isn't going to suit everybody. And again, this is where the Whole30 really thrives, in that it does identify specifically for yourself what suits you, what doesn't. So can you talk us through a little bit about how, when you're coming out and you're doing your reintroduction phase, how that personalized diet can really kind of come into its own?
Yeah, the Whole30 is one set 30-day protocol that everyone follows, but the design of the program happens when you come off the Whole30, you do your reintroduction, you figure out how these foods are impacting you in your individual context, and then you get to make a conscious, deliberate decision about when, how often, and how much to include those foods back into your diet. So it's the tool is used to help you identify how foods impact you individually, and then what you choose to do with that information is entirely up to you. So there is no one size fits all. There is no one, you know, ingredient that's going to be less healthy for everybody universally. And so you use the Whole30 as a tool to help you figure that out for yourself, and then do what you will with the information. Maybe one of the foods you reintroduce impacts you so negatively, you end up with a stomach ache for 3 days, but you love that food so much that you decide it's worth it. Awesome. Good for you. At least you are now making an educated decision about eating that food, knowing how it's going to impact you, versus an uneducated decision where you're just eating it and feeling like crap and not knowing what to blame for what. So that's the whole point of the Whole30, is it helps you identify the perfect diet for you, one that you can take with you for the rest of your life.
Surely you must have had people say, because I've had them say to me, and not even being the person who writes the Whole30, but if you eliminate these things and then you reintroduce them, and because you're not having them all the time, and then you get an upset stomach because of it, surely it's better to just have them little and often so you don't get that impact, so that you don't feel horrible from them. What do you say to that?
Well, I mean, in some situations, that's actually not a bad idea. When I have military men who are going out on active service and they're going to be eating a lot of MREs, understanding that there are some ingredients in there that they may be sensitive to, I might say to them, because you have to have these foods on a really regular basis, probably reintroducing them back into your diet a little bit at a time and getting used to that unpleasant effect might be a good idea. But for the rest of us, if we decide to choose to eat those foods and have those negative consequences, like, look, the negative consequences are our body telling us that there's something in this food that we don't like. It's not making us healthier, whether it's gas or bloating or constipation or skin breakouts or headaches or acne, whatever the symptom is, joint pain and swelling, like, our body is not happy with this food. If you want to keep eating it on a regular basis and the consequences are worth it to you, fine, but don't try to justify it by saying, well, I'm just trying to make, you know, I'm trying to kind of decrease my awareness by feeling a little bit like crap every single day. Like, again, that's just a rationalization.
No, it was definitely, I completely agree. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. I know it's been a really busy day and you've had loads of people who wanted to talk to you. For people who do want to find out more information, because I know a lot of people do have the book, they want more in-depth information, or they may have specific questions. In what ways can they address those, get answers for those, or where can they find out more specific questions, forums, and things like that?
Okay, so you can come to Whole30.com, that's our website, and we've got a forum linked there. So it's either forum.whole30.com, or you can just follow the link from the website. We've got some really super expert moderators who are answering questions. Our community is very savvy. If you Google, honestly, the first place to start is just Google. You can find basically the answer to so many questions, especially specialty topics like Whole30 in endurance athletics, Whole30 in pregnancy, Whole30 in vegetarianism. We're all very active on social media, so you can go to Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all at Whole30, and we're very responsive. I'm also responsive on those pages. If you come to my personal Instagram feed, Melissa_Hartwig, I do the best I can to keep up with comments and answer them there. So we've got a lot of different avenues for people to find information. And obviously, there's a ton of information about the Whole30 in our two books. It starts with food and the Whole30.
Right. And UK specific, if people are going on the forum, do you get a lot of international individuals on there that can then create that get information that may not be specific to America, that we're struggling here to maybe find recipes or ingredients in recipes?
Yeah, there are several threads on the Whole30 forum that are like calling all Whole30 UKers. And we've put a couple resources up on Instagram and Facebook recently too for people who want to find other Whole30 UK bloggers or Whole30 UK Instagrammers. I just sent a resources packet out to this seminar team with some Whole30 specific resources in the UK that I'll make public when I get back. So I am trying to create more resources outside of the US. It's just a little bit harder because I don't live here. If I did, I have a better idea of the kind of situation. So I'm working to try to create some ground support here.
Great. And also to be wary of not everything that says Whole30 is necessarily Whole30. So how can they distinguish to know that it is the proper Whole30 that they're looking at?
Yep. You got to read your ingredients or your labels as if the product isn't Whole30 at all. So basically, you have to be just as critical with things that are tagged Whole30 on the internet as you do with things in the grocery store. So read your ingredients, verify for yourself that there's nothing off plan. If it's a recipe, you know, read all the ingredients and the step-by-step to make sure they're not asking something that wouldn't be allowed on the program. It just requires some critical thinking. And if you're not positive, you can always throw a picture of the label up on social media and somebody will help you differentiate.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for your time, Melissa. It's been an absolute pleasure to meet you. Your seminar today was amazing. And I wish you the best of luck while you're here in the UK. And I'm really hoping that we'll see you in Germany in August, as I hear you will be at the Paleo Convention in Berlin.
Yes, I will be in Berlin in August. I'm really looking forward to it. And next time I come back to London, I'm totally going to come visit your cafe.
Brilliant. That's fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thank you.